The one thing I never really realized that a leader needs to have is actually the ability to fail. I was running this project for a business where we were trying to get a new methodology into the business. What ended up happening though was I missed the fact that this was gonna actually impact a bunch of people's livelihood. You can't just kind of like go sell an idea based on, hey, this is good for the business, or this makes a lot of good sense. You've really gotta talk to people about what's in it for them. End up being a $1 million mistake because that's what we spent on that project before we pulled the plug on it.
The $1 million leadership lesson.
Are you looking to increase sales, grow your brand, and share your leadership message? Then check out our business podcast program. Each week, more people listen to podcasts than have Netflix accounts, and 1/3 of the U.S. population listens to podcasts regularly. So your customers and team are already listening to podcasts. It should be yours. Discover our 5-step profitable podcast framework and what results you can expect for your company by setting up a 20-minute call with my team at benleads.com/schedule. That's benleads.com/schedule.
Welcome back to Lead the Team with number one best-selling author and in-demand corporate trainer, Ben Fanning. On this podcast, the world's most innovative senior leaders share their top success strategies to motivate your direct reports, cultivate your top leaders, and accelerate your career. Let's get started. Here's Ben.
Hey there, Lead the Team. Welcome back to another great episode. Today I have for you Davinder Athwal, who is CFO over at Phenom. He is a people-first CFO who's been transforming and scaling global businesses for over a decade. He's previously served in leadership roles at OSG, Avantex, Nortel Networks, IBM, and PwC. If you're not familiar with Phenom, they're a purpose-driven company that delivers AI-powered talent services to global enterprises. With Phenom, candidates and their hiring organizations find each other faster, and employees develop their skills and evolve, and recruiters become more productive, and managers build stronger performing teams. Davinder, welcome to Lead the Team.
Hey, Ben, great to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
So what was the lesson you learned as you made the transition from follower to leader?
Yeah, look, it's a great question, right? So I think most of us that have become leaders have kind of realized there are a few things that are unexpected on the road to getting there. And if I think about when I was a follower, right, like looking at great leaders, some of the characteristics that kind of came up in my mind, if I thought about those folks, was great vision, great charisma, great can-do attitude. People work for them, die for them. And, you know, it's just successes. The one thing I never really realized that a leader needs to have is actually the ability to fail. And what I mean by that is I think failure actually has much more kind of potential to teach you and to help you become a leader than actually a bunch of successes can. And the reason for that is because it isn't until you hit that limit that you really realize what you're missing, right? So in my case, what it was I was running this project for a business where we were trying to get a new methodology, you could think of it, implemented into the business. And it was going to be a great project, right? This is going to save a ton of money. It was going to make everybody's life easier. We're going to be cutting edge of technology, all those great things, all the things I talked about, right? The vision and the charisma to sell it and everything else. What ended up happening though was I missed the fact that this was going to actually impact a bunch of people's livelihood, right? At least how they perceived it. Because people get used to things a certain way and they know how to do them. They know how to look good doing them. They know how to get paid doing them. And suddenly you show up, you say, we're going to upend all of that. It's very, very threatening to them. So the lesson I learned there was you can't just kind of like go sell an idea based on, hey, this is good for the business, or this makes a lot of good sense. You've really got to talk to people about what's in it for them. And that was a big thing. I end up being a $1 million mistake because that's what we spent on that project before we pulled the plug on it. But as I went back and reflected, what I realized is that you can't just expect people to come along because you've got this great vision. You've really got to dial into what's important to them, why it matters to them. And you got to keep on doing that. It's not a one-time, you know, deal. You got to go back, you know, periodically and reinforce to them why you're doing it so that they come along with you.
Yeah, the $1 million leadership lesson. I love it. And Davinder, what's been the impact of AI on the nature of work? And what does it mean ultimately for jobs and leadership?
I think we're still figuring that out, right? So we're not through the other end of this yet. We're just on the very beginning stages of AI, but we can see some things beginning to form. I think it's very fair to say that the nature of work has changed. And the nature of work is changing and has changed simply because business models are changing in response to AI. So what that means is, look, if you think about, you know, the kind of the job landscape, you can kind of categorize it into maybe five different zones, if you will. Job zone one being something that really doesn't require a whole lot of preparation. Think about a job you can do the day after you graduate from high school. And if you go to the other end of the spectrum on a job zone five type of a job, this requires a lot of preparation, right? Years of school, years of experience, maybe credentialing and things like that. And AI is going to affect all of that. I mean, everybody on that job spectrum is going to be affected. The question is how. And what we would expect to see is that those job zones one and two that are very manual, don't require a lot of preparation to be done, those are at high risk of actually being completely replaced. We already see this. If you go, for instance, to Amazon factories today, where you've got people picking and, you know, kind of shipping things out, 5 years ago, that would have been all people doing it. It may be 120 people doing that job. Now you're down to maybe 12 people doing the job and the rest of it's robotics, right? So we're seeing the impact of that. If you go to the other end of that spectrum, a job zone five, where there's a high level of skill needed, you're never going to replace all those jobs. But what will happen is you'll augment how that job is done. So even those folks are going to be in, because it's a case of, well, how do I augment my lower level skills so I can do more of what I can do? Ultimately, it's all about productivity, because that's, you know, kind of, you know, prize here, if you will. But, you know, think about the fact that in this new world, you've got this combination of fully automated jobs and you've got this kind of augmented, you know, kind of a situation going on as well. What it means is, well, the skills that you need to survive and thrive are now very different, right? Because being able to like do like the robotic jobs aren't going to be enough anymore, right? If you think about that end of the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum, if you're a manager, it's going to be interesting, because up until now, management has really meant managing human resources. It's now going to become much more about managing a combination or a hybrid resource that's both human and robotic. And how do you do all of that is going to be quite interesting. Again, I don't think we know all the answers to that, but I think that's what's coming, you know, down the pike in terms of its impact on the world.
Yeah, every manager, yeah, the leadership skills of, I'm just thinking about like the leadership skills of using AI. And how you did a nice job articulating, well, as leaders, we still need to manage the people, but we've also got to do a better job of managing the technology, because they're going to be so intricately woven together. But I also think about your first story, which was about you've got to tell them what's in it for them in terms of the change. So how are you thinking about that? With people that are going to have their jobs potentially dramatically changed, eliminated, and yeah, that message of making sure the business can articulate that to the employees with emerging.
Yeah, it's a hard message, right? I mean, it's easy for me to sit here and say, if you look at any technology wave, whether it's electricity, whether it's, you know, the PC, the internet, social media, what's happening in every one of those cases, Ben, is that you have this huge disruption that takes place. And millions of jobs just go away, right? Now, we have found up until now that new jobs that have been created as a result of those technologies have always been higher than the jobs that have been lost. And we expect that to be the case here as well. You know, when you're sitting on this side of it, just looking into, you know, kind of the front end of that, it's very hard to kind of really conceptualize where those jobs may come from. But that's been the kind of history up until now. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of disruption, right? That means people are going to have to get reskilled. People are going to have to be, you know, basically maybe move into different parts of the economy, different parts of the country, maybe different parts of the world. But that's what we'd expect to see. But, you know, what's in it for people at the end of the day is it's really about, this is a way for you to get out of the mundane, mindless work and into something that's more meaningful. That would be kind of the ultimate way to kind of, you know, think about this, is it's really
more engaging work ultimately.
Absolutely. Because if you think about AI, you know, the one thing that AI does not have, as of today, at least, and we don't think it's in a likely in the foreseeable future, is context and emotion. So it's very good at replicating workflow that basically is repetitive and doesn't require a whole lot of thinking. But anytime you have to inject that human factor into it, it just doesn't exist. And we think what'll happen is people are going to fill that void, right? So we'll actually hopefully create more growth in the economy. It'll create more opportunity for that. And hopefully people that maybe today stuck in jobs that are maybe more mindless can kind of move up and do things that are a bit more meaningful and more fulfilling to them. Again, very easy for me to sit there and say that, but, you know, If you're a factory worker or you're a shop floor clerk, it's scary. I get that.
Yeah. But some good recommendations there with how to be a great AI, I'll say collaborator on that front. Yeah. And make it as part of your job and your job future as you think about it. What's the worst leadership advice that you've heard?
You know, occasionally, sometimes you hear things like you have to be a hands-on leader. You know, you want to aim for detail-oriented leadership styles. When I hear that, Ben, what I'm really hearing is you're saying be a micromanager, right? It's generally spun about being something that, hey, you're going to pay close attention to the nitty-gritty details because that's important. You're going to make sure the quality is high. It's your responsibility and things like that. You know, some people might even go so far as to say that these types of leaders, that they're actually staying in the loop and they, you know, give them a chance to kind of be more responsive and timely and help their teams in real time. And, you know, accountability is higher and all that sort of thing. But the reality, though, is it's still micromanagement. And from the vast consensus from behavioral scientists, we know that one of the worst things you can do is to be a total dictator, right? Or rely on heavy kind of fear tactics to get things done. Because that kind of stuff, you know, normally backfires. It actually, you know, leads to people being unhappy in their job, disengaged at a much higher level. And, you know, all of that means you get decreased productivity. What does work is being a supportive and empowering leader. It's about being, you know, positive. It's about collaboration. It's about motivating people, you know, with a reward rather than fear. All the things that are exactly the opposite of, you know, what micromanagement is. But it is funny that, you know, you get these kind of positive spins or euphemisms for things that, you know, if you kind of really peel back the onion layers, it's actually quite nasty.
You don't to your point earlier, you got the people provide the context. And being hands-on, AI could spit that out as leadership advice, but we're going to interpret if that means, hey, that's a micromanager, or you got to understand the details. Here's a big distinction there.
That's a great connection there, Ben, right? Because if it was about, you know, a dispassionate, impersonal, hey, let's just crank it out as hard as we can, and I'm going to hold you accountable, you know, to do that, AI can essentially be the manager because there's no human context there. But I think true leadership requires that human context, which really, as of right now, only a human can provide.
Would you or your CEO be a good fit for this podcast? If you know a uniquely talented leader who has a story to share and a message to deliver, then we'd love to host them on the show. Go to benleads.com/apply to fill out a quick form where you can let us know a little bit about yourself, and my team will take a look to see if we're a good fit. That's benleads.com/apply. What's the one trait you wish you could instill in every employee, and why do you think it's important?
You know, when we think, Ben, about where the world is, right, and you think about the pace of change, you know, you hear about constant layoffs, you hear about constant restructuring, you hear about just, you know, the pace of business is kind of moving at such a rapid pace, it seems to be increasing. You know, we no longer live in a world where there's any kind of stability, particularly in the workplace. You know, the days of being able to say that I'm going to go join a company and retire with them, those are long gone. I think anyone that joins anywhere today, know they're going to go through a bunch of different upheavals and changes and restructurings. What I think, you know, that requires, if I could instill one thing in every employee today, it'd be resilience. These are the superheroes, I think, of the workplace, because they're not just good at doing what they do, but they're actually really good at building connections, listening, supporting their coworkers. You know, they really are the ultimate picture, I think, of what a team should look like, you know, trying to go for the win-win situations. These are people that typically know, like, you know, they can't do it alone. They know that they need to have a solid support system in place. They've actually got, you know, colleagues and collaborators both inside the organization, outside the organization. You know, they've got other people's backs, so you know that people have their backs. And that's what it takes today because, you know, given all this, you know, kind of change that leads to stress, they know that trying to do it all alone just isn't possible. And they're trying to do it by taking care of themselves, really. And at the end of the day, then I think the motivation is I'm going to take care of myself, but I'm going to give something back, you know, as part of that.
Yeah, I like the resilience piece of that because I can see the workplace being a lot different. From the standpoint of lots of people start thinking about talking about resilience, they do think about taking care of themselves. But the first part of how you answer that question was interesting in that you're like, well, they build supportive networks inside the company and outside the company. It's not just about getting great sleep
and having grit to face tomorrow. It's about building that environment and your network and really your habits and processes in a way that you can keep going. Really, really helpful insight there, Devin.
Yeah, I mean, as humans, we're social animals, right? And we're wired to be part of a pack or a tribe or a network. That's how we, our brains think. And this is tapping into that, right? I mean, the early humans that were alone, they didn't survive because, you know, they couldn't do it alone. And the world today doesn't look like, you know, cavemen running around, but the anthropology behind it is not that different, is what I think.
Yeah, separation from the tribe meant death, essentially, because people couldn't survive alone. And that's how we survived all these years as a species.
Yeah, a good friend of mine, you know, once said that there were two kinds of humans originally. There were the ones that were wired in to be social, and then there were the loners. The loners didn't survive because they got eaten by the lions, right? So basically, you've now got, social people that are still here.
We often work with leaders around the catastrophic cost of turnover. And this is an interesting question for you because you're CFO, so you understand the numbers. And your company also helps reduce that kind of impact from the hiring standpoint. So what's your perspective on the true cost of turnover and a company should be tracking it for themselves?
Yeah, look, you know, I think Gallup did a study recently, and they put the cost band of turnover just in the United States at over $1 trillion. I think about that. That's an astounding number, right? $1 trillion lost every year just in the U.S. This is due to voluntary churn, right? Let's just break that down because, like, these numbers can get so big and so abstract at some point. You know, they don't really mean much at some point. But if you think about just the U.S., right, the average churn across all the U.S. is about 26%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, part of the federal government. The cost of replacing an employee ranges from 1/2 to maybe 2 times that annual salary. So think about a company that have just 100 employees who might make $50,000 a year on average. Mm-hmm. If you apply the math I just outlined, the cost to that business annually of churn is anywhere from $660,000 to about $2.5 million every single year being lost. Big. This is a business, right? I mean, this is how, to me, it becomes real. Now, there's many other costs, right, that you're never going to capture on a spreadsheet. Think about the impact of losing your best problem solvers on your team. Think about your most innovative thinkers. Think about your most reliable winner. Think about the impact on the team. We just talked about, you know, kind of creating networks and things like that. Somebody leaves, it really does, disrupt that whole social network that might exist in place. And then you think about the effect of that on the wider staff. Think about the effect of that on your customers. Yeah. You know, depending on how good the exits are on the quality, you could actually jeopardize a brand. You might even like find yourself in litigation or reputational damage if, you know, it's not managed properly. But here's the thing I find even more astounding than the $1 trillion number, though, Ben, right? So most of this damage for businesses, it's actually self-inflicted. You know, it's actually quite easy to avoid because when people go through these exit interviews and they kind of talk about why they're leaving, survey after survey has shown that in the 3 months leading up to somebody quitting, their simple reason, hey, nobody spoke to me about my future. And I assumed I didn't have one here, right? So it's not unusual or unreasonable if somebody hasn't been spoken to about their future at an organization that they assume, well, maybe I don't have one. Maybe I'm going to go somewhere else. And, you know, you just think about that for a moment, right? So in over 3 months, no one stopped to ask the employee, hey, how do you feel about your job? How do you feel about where you're going? That's an easy fix to have, right? And we've been hearing about the war for talent for decades now, right? It's not anything, but I would say that the battle is over and talent has won. In many cases, that balance of power is shifted from employer to employee. And this environment just isn't enough to kind of make marginal improvements to employee satisfaction and things like that. I think as true leaders, you've really got to think about developing what I would call an irresistible organization that engages employees as sensitive, passionate, creative creators. Because again, you think about what AI is going to do, that's where the world is going. So, it's kind of frustrating to me in a way because it's so easy to fix that, but it just isn't done. And we actually provide a solution where, you know, the platform almost does that for you. So people can interact, they can create a path, they can think about, you know, where they are right now, where they may be able to go. And that actually goes a long way towards basically creating some of that engagement. that people are looking for.
Yeah, it really ties in nicely to how to the very second question, where we talked about finding that blend of AI versus human interaction and where the real impact is. And by finding that sweet spot, you can reduce your cost of turnover and have a much more resilient organization. So what are three success strategies that all employees need to understand?
You know, if I look back at my career, and I've led many teams at this point, and if I think about what are the kind of the common, you know, kind of objectives that I would give them and I'd be looking for around where, you know, assessing them, the top three that would come to mind, the first one is like, you know, set goals for yourself. This is the old, you know, take charge of your career, right? So set goals, but make sure they make sense, because having a target in mind actually makes the work more enjoyable, as opposed to just, you know, kind of flailing around trying to do things that you think, you know, are important, but you're just reacting to kind of whatever the fire of the day is. But that's the magic of goal setting. It kind of gets you outside of that kind of day-to-day, you know, fire drill, if you will. And as I said, it's not about just picking, you know, any old goal. It's got to be about choosing something that's kind of, you know, specific enough, ties into the overall goals of your team, your department, your company. It's got to be achievable, obviously, right? It's got to actually, you know, move the needle in some way. If you can do that, I think you're kind of beginning to create a roadmap to your success. It helps guide you through all the ups and downs and all the turbulence and all the noise. But, you know, do that and check in to see, you know, if it goes in any kind of adjustment, because it's hard, again, given all the change I talked about, to set goals at the beginning of the year and like stick to them throughout. I think
they change quickly, especially in a technology organization. Yeah. So do you set annual goals in Phenom, or you do? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you manage that when it changes?
We set objectives, Ben, right? Because, you know, even my annual budget now is not something that I set in stone. That was something that maybe 15, 20 years ago you could do. But you think about where business is today, you can have a high-level plan of where you're going. I've got no clue how I'm going to get there, because I've got a sense, I've got to adapt, I've got to, you know, kind of react to what's happening on the ground. Sometimes things go south and I've got to basically react and mitigate that. Yeah. Other things, opportunities come up and you've got to be able to take, you know, advantage of that. So that flexibility is really key, I think, for everyone. The second one, you know, no surprise, communication, right? I mean, you got to be able to talk eloquently and articulately and express what you're talking about, but it's also about listening, because you really can't, you know, plug into that social network. You really can't explain what you're trying to do without actually listening as well. And I would say communication more and more is actually the glue that holds teams together. And that can be as simple as like, you know, having a conversation at the coffee, you know, kind of pot or the water cooler, whatever it is, maybe a brainstorming, you know, but that ability to be able to kind of communicate by both effective listening and expressing what you're thinking is a real game changer in most businesses. And that just doesn't happen enough, unfortunately. It's also about kind of understanding where they're coming from. So you can't just, you know, as I once told, you know, the opposite of talking isn't waiting to talk. It's actually listening. You got to actively listen. And I think that requires a certain level of empathy and, you know, a real willingness to kind of understand a different point of view. But that would be the second one. And then, you know, finally, I'd say, again, it goes back to the same thing, you know, just given how fast things are changing and the pace of change that we're all dealing with, stay sharp and be agile, you know, because being able to adapt on the fly, it's hard to do, right? Because it's constant disruption, it's constant reprioritizing, and you may find that all that work I did last week now has got to be put on the back burner. But that really is, I think, a superpower that most employees, you know, can actually adapt into. The idea that, you know, learning is something that doesn't stop after you finish school or you take that course. It's every day, right? I feel like I go into meetings and I'm trying to learn. You know, I'm really trying to learn about where we're going, where we are, what's on people's minds. Because with all of that, without all of that, you just can't move things forward.
Yeah, I like that. And some people might be surprised to hear the CFO saying, hey, you need to be a better communicator. You need to have this soft skill, be a better listener. And definitely the CFO saying, hey, you got to learn to be agile. I mean, you're like this is the modern age CFO. Maybe the last question on this, but I mean, how has being a CFO changed since you've been at the helm?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, when I began my career, then being a CFO was really about the numbers. It was really about controls and governance and and making sure that, you know, we understood what had happened last quarter or last year. It's kind of very backward focused. And there's a real focus on getting, you know, the accuracy 100% right and mm-hmm. you know, not any kind of judgment in there. You fast forward to today, looking backwards it's important, it's necessary, but that isn't what drives the role. I think now it's all about looking forward. It's about dealing with the unknowns. It's about making the judgments. You use history, obviously, to do that. But it's really about, where are we going? It's about looking around the corner, right? So it's not about looking in the rearview mirror, but it's much more about looking forward, looking around the corner to see what's coming around it. Because, you know, as I said a moment ago, there's a lot of opportunities that show up in business, mm-hmm. and you got to be prepared to be able to take advantage of them. So in the past, if it's much more about, I want to make sure, you know, we don't take any risks and we don't, you know, cause any kind of a negative outcome, I'd say today the job's all about creating optionality, right? Every day I come to work, I'm thinking about what more optionality can I create for this business, because all I know is I don't know what's going to happen at the end of this quarter or the end of this year, but I can create optionality to be able to respond to different scenarios. So that's probably the biggest way that the CFO job has changed, you know, while I've been working.
My, how times have changed, and great advice really that applies to all leaders right now in terms of how they can be thinking about what a leader, what an executive looks like in today's workforce and how it's probably going to look in the future. Davinder, thank you for coming on Lead the Team, sir.
Want to boost your productivity and decision-making? Get vital insights from each episode delivered directly to your inbox. A great resource, whether you've listened to the episode or not. Go to benfanning.com/insight.